put like fucking antibiotic shit all over it.
Biotic shit.
We're recording. It appears to be working.
Cool.
Hey, man.
Get out of here.
How you doing?
Get out of here. You ain't invited to this party.
How you doing?
Welcome.
That was just for Scott.
Yeah. Hey, Scott. How are you?
Hi, Scott.
It's day four.
Yep.
The con's pretty much over. It's only open for a couple more hours.
Correct.
You and I ran around yesterday and today.
Correct.
Played a number of different games.
Well, I think we finished yesterday.
We did.
Last night.
I didn't talk about all the games I played.
You loser.
Because I was losing my voice.
You loser.
I know. I was like,
fine, let's go through Ash's games.
Hath returned. let's just do a quick, how'd you enjoy PAX this year? What's your general thoughts and consensus?
Seemed not as busy this year as usual years. We approached it pretty low stress, so I had a good, decent time, because we didn't really book a lot of things to run around to.
Right.
Doesn't mean we didn't play stuff, just means we didn't, like, do a lot of press appointments, which is okay in my book most times.
Yeah.
And then, you know, hung out with a bunch of new friends and old friends, and it was a good time. It was a different year. We've talked about it already, I think, but that a lot of people we know did not come this year.
Mm.
A lot of people we would usually see at PAX East we did not get to see because they aren't here for various reasons, good and bad, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, so I had fun. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was good. It's good. Definitely the overall vibe of PAX is changing a little bit, and I think part of that has to do with the fact that there's, you know, three in the U.S. and now the PAX tabletop in the U.S. as well, and then PAX Australia. So I think it devs are being a little more, and publishers are being a little bit more picky about whether or not they send their games to PAX,
right? Or in any like huge capacity,
right? Because I was thinking, like, I didn't see Activision this year. I didn't see EA this year.
Nope.
Nintendo was here.
Square was here.
Square was here.
Microsoft.
Was Bethesda
PlayStation
here?
Nope.
I don't think so. So it's interesting.
No,
a lot
Ubisoft,
of the,
I don't think.
Maybe.
If they were like, I think what happens is, I think with this convention is that those kind of companies will go like, Microsoft can put our game up in their booth.
There was a
or
lot
something.
Of that.
You know, so it's less like they are here in their own pirate ship or something like that, and more like, oh, we'll let Microsoft or PlayStation handle it.
And there was a lot of available now games.
Yeah. Oh, my God. A ton of available
a
now
ton.
Games.
I would say, you know, of the larger games, AAA games.
I don't,
I would
other
say,
than Detroit Become Human, I don't think anything was out.
There was a
already.
Lot of stuff that's already available.
Or not out already.
Or right around the corner type of games.
Yeah.
So very interesting. You know, we mentioned before the first year that Matt and I came was 2008. And the dynamic back then, it was everyone was really clamoring to show off their games for the very first time, sort of like double and triple A games.
Because it was the first non-E3 event, really. Mm-hmm. You know, GDC and E3 were the only two that were of any in America.
Yeah, in the U.S., absolutely. So, yeah, the tone's changed a little bit. I'm curious to see if they can keep up the momentum with these shows this many every year.
I think my side theory is that America is getting a little conventioned out.
Yeah.
There are giant Comic-Cons in almost every, not city, but like I would say every, I can almost guarantee with maybe in the contiguous U.S., if you live in the contiguous states, that you are within 300 miles of a major convention that rolls through near you.
Right.
I'd be willing to bet. There are like conventions all over the frickin' place for comics and games and movies and TV and all that stuff. They're just, they're everywhere now. And I think it's like people are starting to go like, oh, okay, well,
yeah,
you know, I'm not going to go to seven conventions this year.
Well, it's also harder. A lot of them are focused around selling stuff, like retail sales or what have you. And now that the internet is what it is,
you can get your hands
on stuff. If you're
remotely
savvy, like you don't really have to go, you know, wandering around in a sea of people.
Correct.
But anyway, so PAX is a little bit different this year. It's still an incredible time, a lot of fun. Like Matt said, we met up with a lot of great friends and, you know, saw a lot of familiar faces, and that's, you know, what these things are all about. But we also played some games.
Yeah.
Do you want to kick things off with some of the new stuff that you checked out?
I played a new old game.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't think if this game is out. I'm pretty sure, but maybe it's not. We talked about it a little bit briefly yesterday. Well, not on this podcast, but outside of it. I played Donut County.
Nice.
Which has been, I think, at every PAX that I've been at for like the past four PAXes, if I can remember correctly. But I've never played it for whatever reason. And it is super adorable and fun. I think it's been reviewed many times, so I don't know if there's much I can say about
What's the general gist of
the gist
Donut
is that it's a physics game
okay.
where you are a donut hole in the ground sucking all the things down to the far depths of the earth
right.
that are in this town that you're in. And it, the town has a very Animal Crossing vibe.
Okay.
So you're kind of like these, there's these creatures and there's a human and you're causing havoc and you know, knocking
I've,
things
I've
down
heard
below.
It's a little bit like Katamari.
Katamari mixed with, yeah, with, yeah, it's that kind of vibe. But it's super fun and funny and I had a really good time. I just played, the demo was about 15 minutes, wasn't very long. But it was super enjoyable, and they had adorable merch, but I did not pick up any, even though I thought about it, because I kind of told myself I wasn't going to buy anything this year.
It might be at the next
PAX. Correct.
You never know.
I have a feeling.
It might be.
They will be.
I played a game called Disco Elysium.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. So I kind of liken it to, it's a sort of a detective noir story. Third person isometric view. The art style is absolutely gorgeous. It's kind of like looks like a little bit like an oil painting, like very mm-hmm. stylized. You play as a detective trying to unravel a mystery, but it also is a bit like a point and click adventure, sort of like an old Sierra style game.
Yeah.
So you gather items. It has like a loot screen similar to like a Baldur's Gate or like, you know, an isometric RPG where you can equip different things on your character. So like equip like necktie and like jacket and like
yeah.
slack. So you like the narrative starts out during the demo of your character being like completely drunk. And there's this weird sort of, there's this dark undercurrent to the game where you kind of feel like there might be some supernatural elements involved. Sort of like True Detective.
Okay.
Mixed with like some Lovecraft, like the whole sequence of you waking up in the demo is like an internal monologue with yourself about like releasing yourself from darkness. So you kind of go through various dialogue options and like you actually have to choose to wake up. It's like,
yeah.
do you embrace the darkness or you choose to wake up? And like you have like 20 different options before you can open your eyes.
Huh.
And it's like, finally you're like, fine, I submit to waking up. And
yeah.
like, you wake up and you're like this drunk guy on a floor and you're a detective on, you know, like on this, like, yeah, you're completely drunk just in your underwear.
That's cool.
You spend a few minutes like, you know, getting your stuff together and figuring out, what the scope of the narrative is. But, I feel like, depending on the length of this, it could be a whole lot of fun. I didn't do during the time of the demo because it is very, very dialogue heavy. I didn't do a whole lot of like detecting,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like it's hard for a game to do this detective shtick well.
Yeah.
Because you don't want it. You don't want it to devolve into like just mini puzzles.
Right.
You like having actual detective work in a game, I think, would be amazing. But like, what does that consist of? So I'm hoping as this game progresses, if the detective aspect of it is great, I have a feeling this could be a whole lot of fun.
That's cool.
It's definitely gorgeous. The game's called Disco Elysium. There is partial VO in it. There's a lot of dialogue. It's very dialogue heavy, but it's not all voiced over. I would love to see it all voiced over. The voiceover that I did hear was pretty good. The writing was actually really great. You know, just you can imagine having a guy's internal monologue with himself on whether or not he needs to wake up could be horrible.
Yeah.
If it was poorly written.
Yeah.
But it was actually very well written.
That's cool.
Yeah. Like very, like I said, very Lovecraft, super dark, True Detective meets, you know, I don't know, not Blade Runner because there's no
yeah.
real cyberpunk, but you know, that kind of noirish, noirish angle. But it's good. So Disco Elysium, I don't believe it's available quite yet.
Cool.
I should have checked, but I haven't had a chance to check the docs yet. So check it out. It's good though.
I just checked the dates on Donut County and it says 2018.
Oh, okay.
Mac, PC, and iOS.
Okay.
So
awesome.
That's cool.
I'll look up Disco Elysium while you're
cool.
talking about your next one.
The next one's not a game I reviewed. It's just a thing that I want Scott to know I attempted to do. Which was PlayStation brought Detroit Become Human, which is a hard title to say because it is grammatically weird. I went over, and the booth was kind of chaos. It had like 20 TVs set up to play this game and no actual line management whatsoever. So finally found a Sony rep and was just like, hey, how do I play this? And he was like, you just get behind a TV and you wait. And I went, okay. And I said, how long is each demo? And he goes, somewhere between 15 and maybe 20 minutes, depending on how long it takes them. And I was like, okay. And then I looked, and every TV had at least four people sitting behind it. And I was like, I love you, Scott, but I am not waiting an hour and a half to try out a game that's going to come out soon enough anyways.
That's the thing about, I think, us at this point coming to this, which may not be the best thing for podcasts and our listeners, but like, it's one thing we always say in the PAX orientation panel is don't spend a lot of time waiting for the stuff, especially when it's come out, and enjoy the experience of PAX. So a lot of these games like that we don't get appointments for, or we don't set appointments for, we just kind of roll up to, which is the wonderful thing about
I actually like rolling up, though. It's appointments make for weird. Sometimes they're weird.
Yes.
what I was going to say is that I did watch it, though. It's made by Quantic Dream. Mm-hmm. I watched a few people play it, watched all the demo stuff. If you were into Heavy Rain and everything else, it looks very similar in tone and kind of heavy, but it's looks like it's got a bit of a sci-fi vibe. But it was cool overall. I think, you know, Scott's probably going to review it later when it comes out because those are his jam, I assume.
He likes him.
But it looked cool, and I needed to state for the record, Scott, I attempted to play the game that I know you wanted us to play.
Yes.
But I did not set an appointment for it, and the line was insane.
Disco Elysium. It is not out yet. It has a release date of TBA, but it is being published by Humble.
Cool.
Excuse me, but it's going to be available on Steam.
Awesome.
So Disco Elysium, not quite out yet, but it was really good. I think it's kind of a surprising one for me.
Cool. I like that. So what else you got?
All right. Let me hold on. Pull open the old document here. See what I got. I played a game called City of Shroud.
Okay.
Or City of the Shroud. And City of the Shroud was, I'll talk about the innovative aspects of the game I liked. It is a turn-based sort of third-person turn-based strategy game.
Okay.
Where you play as sort of this nondescript, you play as, I guess, a variety of different characters. The main character you play with in the demo here at PAX was sort of this bulky kind of monster man. The thing that separates this is, unlike an XCOM or, you know, other turn-based strategy games, this one actually allowed you to input different controller combos.
Cool.
Hold on one second. There's robots coming. input different controller.
This is how they're removing us from the building.
Input
you probably can't even hear that on the mic.
Probably not. You can input different things into the controller or the mouse and keyboard to... have your character do different combos and cue them up. So if imagine a game like XCOM, but instead of just allowing your character to do attack one or attack two, like your special moves, you can actually choose how to link your different moves all together in a series of attacks. And then, of course, as the demo progressed, I had a number of different characters under my control, and I can issue all sorts of chains of attacks to them at the same time, and I'll have them pull off different special moves. So, for instance, if I wanted my guy to do a strong uppercut, I would press, like, up, and then up, right, down, and then the next guy I could do, like, down, right, up, and it would do, like, a whirlwind kick.
Wow.
And then you could basically queue up all your attacks for all your characters, and then you get to kind of watch this brawl unfold. I was terrible at this.
Yeah.
Like, the guy actually had to come over and help me because I was just, like, literally, like, just not, I don't know. I just, it wasn't clicking with me.
Sure.
Like, the way that I play these games. Like, I'm like a turn-based strategy guy for, you know, over 30 years at this point. So it's like, to introduce a new mechanic, like a Street Fighter mechanic into a turn-based strategy game for me is like, oh,
right.
Like. Yeah, do you want spaghetti sauce in your Coca-Cola?
It's right.
Why? But it was cool and it was different. The overall aesthetic was cool. It kind of looked like a sort of Mad Max dystopian town that my characters were fighting in.
Mm-hmm.
The character designs were sort of unique and off the wall, very like anime inspired. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm interested to see where it goes. I didn't really catch on to the narrative too much, but as we've said many times, that's sort of the problem with these demos on the show floor is they oftentimes take a snippet of gameplay from like the middle of the game and yeah. they're like, check this out, you know?
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to play the boring first 2 hours of every game. So we'll give you the middle section where you actually have shit unlocked.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was called City of the Shroud. If you're into turn-based strategy and if you're into fighting games and you're like, I wish these two things would combine, then it's an indie game for you.
Okay, cool. I played a game called Semblance, which was on the show floor, had a nice little booth. It is out of South Africa and is a puzzle platformer, which I know you may not always like, but let me throw this at you. I called it like it was very zen, much like I said about the other game I played yesterday. This game was super calm and kind of relaxing, and you were this little lump of like Play-Doh essentially moving through the world and solving these little puzzles. But what was interesting about the puzzles was that you were deforming the world around you to solve a puzzle. So like there'd be like a ramp, and then there's like this little crystal thing you have to collect at the end of the ramp. But the ramp's blocked by something, and you could literally like jump into the ramp and deform it like if it was all made out of Play-Doh.
Okay.
And like form it around the thing that might get in your way. And then you would like jump over it and go, and then you could go get the little crystal, and then it would like go back and you keep doing it. And you're healing the world over time is what the goal of the game is. It was super nice and kind of fun, and I played it for about 30 minutes, and it was easy to sit down and just start playing. There wasn't a lot of like explanation required. I think I got stuck once and he explained something that they said they found really interesting, which was that there were like these two lasers and you had to kind of deform the world so that the lasers would point towards each other and then get blocked. Okay. You know? And he said what was interesting was that from the mechanics that they built into the game, an unintended piece of the puzzle was that like, depending on where you deform the land, it could like bend and turn the things like more or less, but it wasn't a puzzle that they intended from the beginning. It just kind of was a side effect of while they were making the game, they realized this was like a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. He was like, yeah, he's like, you know, a lot of it came out of just messing with the puzzles in the land and seeing what goes on. And you could tell they were really super into it and like really enjoy this game they made. But I really liked it. Scott would probably love it. I'm going to be shocked if he doesn't play it when it actually comes out. It's called Semblance, Scott, so you can write that one down. But it had a sort of same thing. I'm seeing a lot of these. I think this is like the third time I've said this on the podcast this weekend, but it's very kind of flat colors, but still feels really deep. Like there's a lot of depth to it. So it's not like a super, it wasn't a 3D game or a polygonal game. It was very kind of flat side scrolly. But it was a super interesting mechanic. I enjoyed it quite a bit. There was no death. So if you did die, you regened right at the puzzle you were already at.
Okay.
So there was no like permanent death or like go all the way back to the beginning. You didn't have to re-traverse whole pieces of the puzzle that you'd already gone through. And I was like, is this for the press demo or is this regular? He's like, I don't know. He's like, we didn't want to punish you for doing something wrong because you tried. He was like, we wanted you to try and then try again and then figure it out.
That's cool.
He said the other thing that they thought was really interesting that watching people play is that when you're deforming the land, you can actually make, like, let's say you have to jump over a thing. You can make that jump easier or harder based on how much you deform the land. And he was like, it's very interesting to watch some people just stop and then try to make this, like, hard jump. And they'll try to do it, like, over and over again instead of, like, just continuing to deform the land a little bit more to, like, make the jump easier.
Right.
And he was like, so people are, like, creating their own difficulty at the end of the day, too, with it, which was funny to me. But game's called Semblance. It is going to be out on PC, Mac, and Nintendo Switch.
Cool.
This year.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
You and I both played a game called Can't Drive This.
Yeah, we did. Are we going to talk about that?
Yeah, let's talk about Can't Drive This. So Can't Drive This is a racing stunt game with it has a very unique mechanic that I was not expecting.
Three unique mechanics, really, or two unique mechanics.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I walked up to it by myself.
Yeah, and I did too.
And started to try and drive the truck.
That's not useful.
Yeah, so Can't Drive This is an interesting game because it's a two-player game.
Yeah, couch co-op.
cooperative game where one person is driving a stunt monster truck and the other person is literally creating the track that the stunt monster truck is driving on in real time.
Yes.
So it's part puzzle game because the puzzle for the track builder, the puzzle for him is keeping the monster truck alive.
Correct.
And the driver is, his job is to stay on the track that's being created. So
well,
rather
there's
than
a
trying,
secondary mechanic for the driver, which oh, is yeah. that if you drop below 15 miles per hour for longer than 2 seconds, you explode.
Right. So it's a little
so
bit of the movie
speed. You have to keep moving.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, yeah. And then what was really fun for us when I played with one of the devs was like, he was like talking to me while I was doing it. He's like, okay, you're going to have to go left here. You're going to have to go left here. It felt very like a rally car. Like, you know, how a rally car driver drives. There's
right.
a navigator sitting next to him. He's just yelling directions at him while he's driving.
Mm-hmm.
But he was, like, building maps to, like, catch me because I would jump or something. It's such a fast game. You die very quickly.
Oh,
but
yeah. It's very fast.
I don't know about you. I was laughing and had, an absolute blast the entire time.
I really
I
did. I had
it.
A good time, too. And I ended up laughing quite a bit because you create these ridiculous scenarios. And did you get a chance to build it all?
Yeah, I did both.
Yeah, I did both as well. And they're both fun. I was like, is building actually going to be enjoyable? Because driving was cool. The physics on the truck were a little wonky, but it's still early.
I think
you know?
Almost intentional, though. Like, they're very cartoonish in
right.
its ability
like
to slide
like the truck
around
has no
fly.
Weight at
yeah,
all.
It's
like,
zero weight. Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically like a paper truck.
Yeah.
But building was really, really fun. You know, you could basically, I guess the mechanic we should describe is that you as the builder of the track are given pieces in an almost random order,
correct.
I believe.
Yeah.
And then you have like a very limited amount of time to place them down in order to keep the driver moving before the truck explodes.
Yeah.
So like you said, I don't know, I probably played 10 times and the whole situation lasted less than 3 or 4 minutes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I
so
mean, it was like,
yeah, very
infinitely demoable game as opposed to others. But yeah, the building the map I found more stressful than being driving, which is not what you would think. You would think the driver's going to be all stressed out, but the driver's just kind of like fucking going and the map maker has to like keep that crap moving. So mm-hmm. I found the building the map part to be pretty stressful, but it was really fun. I really, really laughed a bunch and had a great time playing.
I believe this is going to be Steam, a PS4, and Xbox One.
I believe
One
so,
as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about Switch yet, but that is called Can't Drive This. So, couch co-op, there's some good ones this PAX. I think that's kind of making a bit of a comeback. Do you have any you want to talk about specifically? Or
how many you got left?
I have two left.
Ooh, I have two left.
Wow. I think it's your turn.
How
then.
Do we do this?
I don't know.
I played a very, 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 very goofy game called Coffence.
Okay.
And Coffence Fight to the Last Drop, where you are two characters holding coffee cups. And the art style is really super fun in this, but it's like a nerdy, like library look, or not library, like a literary kind of guy. There's like a hipster barista. There was like a businessman, and there was a woman. There was like two female characters. I only got to play as one character. I didn't get to really cycle through them. But it's a really fun, just a goofy art style. And the mechanic of the game is that it's a twin stick, and you're holding a coffee cup, and you can like throw your coffee cup essentially, or you can like jab it. And you aim it with the right stick, and you are trying to knock the other player's coffee cup up so that coffee comes out of it, and then catch his coffee before he does. And you have basically each drop of coffee that you knock out is like a life point, and it's like starts out like, I think it starts out at 4 to 4, and you're trying to get him to 0 and you to 8. So you're over there just like knocking, like whipping him over and over again with your coffee cup, trying to get his coffee cup to spill coffee, and then you catch his spilt coffee. That is the entirety of the game. And it was also another game that was like super fun and just like easy to sit down and play. I played Rando at the end of the day because it was just a guy who I was like, it's two player. And the other guy was like, the dev was like, yeah, it is. And he was like trying to figure out if he was going to play. And then another guy walked up. He's like, oh, I played this last night. It was so fun. Can I play again? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, let's play, man. But I was going to look up what it's coming out on. But it was just a fun. It made me think of, you're gonna laugh when you hear what it made me think of.
Uh-oh.
But it made me think of the arm waggling Wii game that we play, or not Wii. I think it was a Kinect.
Oh,
game.
It was a Kinect game a long time ago.
It was that kind of
like
goofy,
Noodle Fighter, or whatever the heck that was. That game never came out. I think.
I don't know. It was a really just kind of fun game, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what this was. It was just stupid fun and just like laughing the whole time. Because you're a barista knocking coffee out of somebody else's hand and catching it. That's good. The mechanic is very
games
spaghetti.
Games like that are so fun sometimes.
Yeah.
So fun.
So it was Coffence Fight to the Last Drop. I don't know what it's coming out on. I tried to look it up, but it doesn't say. So I would assume, I think I played it on PC, but you never know. It might be on Xbox Kinect or whatever. So
keep your eyes peeled if you're into some coffee spilling action.
Yeah.
I played a game that we have talked about before, but now it is coming to the Switch, called Just Shapes and Beats.
Yeah.
I had not played it prior to today, so I'm very late to the party.
Yeah.
But if you have not played Just Shapes and Beats, Just Shapes and Beats is essentially a reflex sort of bullet hell experience where you have you and up to four other players, which was really, really cool on the Switch because you could use the little tiny Switch controller. So there's four of us playing on a single screen. You each play as a shape. And as the music plays in the background, it'll generate different obstacles for you to dodge. And so basically you're playing your little shape and you have a dash mechanic and you're trying to avoid what's being spawned. And it's going to be like little bullets or it's going to be giant walls of lasers or what have you. And it all goes in sync with the music. This was so much fun with three other people because you basically... You know, bullet hell games are fun because it tests your reflex. But this has a revive mechanic. So if people lose their health bar, you can actually go up and tag them back in and bring them back. And so the four of you are kind of working together to get through these very challenging obstacles. We got through and defeated the boss. And we got to the special stage, which was the theme to Mortal Kombat.
That's cool.
And the theme to Mortal Kombat had these these laser-generated, like, kung fu obstacles of, like, giant pink kung fu men that flew across the screen that you had to dodge and all sorts of just like debris and, you know, polygons that you had to like avoid and such. The music was really great. I found myself kind of moving my thumbstick with the beat. And I don't know if that helped me. There's no mechanic to actually have that help you dodge stuff, but I felt it kept me engaged.
Right.
And so I would kind of be watching all the different bullet hell objects kind of flying at my character from all directions. But since I was so in tune with the beat, it helped me kind of keep my eye on my character. So I'm moving my thumb with the beat and my character's kind of waggling back and forth. And then I'm, hello.
I'm sorry to
interrupt. It's okay. So anyway.
That's a dope icon guy.
Yeah, thanks, Doblicon. We're gonna start a Doblicon rumble here. So anyway, we were asked to move. We're in a louder
corner now.
Yes. So we only have a couple more things to talk about before we get out of here and take off back to our respective lairs. I played a game called Feyland.
Feyland?
Feyland.
I think I saw this on the floor.
Did you see Feyland? Yeah. So Feyland, it's funny, I was actually like tackled by a PR person walking around because my media badge was on, and she's like, come play Feyland, and I'm like, sure, and she was like, it's on the other side of the convention hall with me, and I'm like, all right, so I followed her, I literally walked from one end to the other, I'm like, where is this game?
Yeah.
I don't know why she wanted me to play Feyland so badly.
Yeah.
But I ended up really enjoying it. Feyland was a lot of fun. It was a Metroidvania experience, meaning that like I really did get Metroid vibes and Castlevania vibes from this
game.
For a variety of reasons. So you start off and you're a humanoid guy. I believe you to be human.
Sure.
Perhaps an elf, maybe. It is a side-scrolling action game, sort of like... like I said, like Metroid or Castlevania.
Cool.
But you you get different quests from the people in town, and they send you on this difficult quest to, you know, go gather a ring. But apparently there's a variety of different quests that you can pick up from a quest hub in town that can send you to different places on the map. The thing that I really liked about it is you can get a variety of different equipment that you can equip on your character in an inventory selection screen. So I got different armor, a couple different weapon types, different food, things like that, and you can actually equip it, and it appears and changes the appearance of your character. It is very, very, very hard.
I assumed, yeah.
Very hard. There was, like, you know, similar to these games, it's equal in difficulty to, like,
Mega Man, Castlevania.
Castlevania, yeah.
Where you, if you mistime a jump or something like that, you kind of have to start all over.
Right.
I kept getting screwed. There's these little vines that popped out of the ground and, like, do a knockback. So I'd be platforming and not see the vines that are going to pop up land, and it would kick me off and throw me, like, into an abyss. And I died just a lot. I'm terrible at these games, and I felt like the guy, one of the devs that was...
The lady that dragged you over there was frustrated.
She was like, why did I pick this guy to go play the game? No, but I feel like a game like this has a lot of potential depending on the depth. I feel like there was... It was cool because you could actually talk to all the NPCs in town, which was a different sort of dynamic.
That's cool.
I don't remember from, you know, those original Castlevania Metroid games. So there's a little bit more backstory going on. There's a reason for the quests to occur. You could power up by, you know, getting items. Like, I got a wooden shield and a better sword, and that all that stuff is persistent, so you'd be able to bring it on the next quest with you.
So, that's cool.
So rather than, you know, you did get items in those original games, but I feel like there would be more here.
Right.
And, you know, kind of like the next generation of a Metroidvania sort of game.
That's cool.
This game was called Feyland. It's currently, I believe they have a Kickstarter going. It is going to be for PC initially, and then hopefully PS4, Xbox One. Maybe Switch, they said, but it's by a company called Tail Games.
Cool.
If you're into Metroidvania stuff and you're looking for questy quests, I say check it out.
Cool. Last thing I played was an iOS game.
Oh, cool.
Called Bouncy Smash. And you are a little bouncy ball, and there's other like creature-like balls bouncing around, and you're trying to like smash on their head. Sounds very simplistic, but there are like power-up moves you can do that you earn over time. There's a mechanic of chaining all the bouncing together. So if you like chain more than 10, you gain health, and if you chain like 5, you start getting bonuses to how much you like points you score. And there's a whole mechanic inside of the app itself for like, you know, leaderboarding your friends and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It was really fun. I just happened to stop because it was available, and the guy's like, you want to play? And I was like, sure. And I started playing, and then he started talking me through it. But it looks really nice. I described it very simplistically. It's got a lot of physics to it, as opposed to like the car feeling sort of weightless. This felt very like everything moved in a very specific way and had a lot of like really specific physics going on. And I actually really ended up enjoying it. Apparently, I was pretty good at it, too. He was like... You're doing really well, man. I was like, really? He's like, there's no end. You're just going to keep going. And I was like, okay. I just kept going for a while.
Cool.
And I died, I think, like, I don't know how many levels in. But I could see it being really addicting. It's a phone game on iOS available now on iPhone and iPad. And because of that, I'm kind of like, oh, I could see that being fun. You know, like it was a really good like train type game where you're just sitting there and you're kind of like bouncing and catching all this stuff. I played it on a controller, but they said that you could play it directly on device with no controller at all, and it was fine. And they said that's how they all play. But it was super fun. It's called Bouncy Smash. It's available on the App Store now, and I think on Android soon.
Awesome. Well, that about wraps things up.
I know, it's getting loud.
I know. Our PAX East 2018 coverage.
These
thank you guys so much.
People better get away from us.
I know. They're going to tell us to move from here, too, apparently. They own the hotel now. But anyway, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. We, of course, will be back soon with more cons and more coverage. And I don't know exactly how we're going to split this up or what episode this will be. But if you want to follow us on social media and you're not doing so already, you can follow us at NerdAppropriate. If you want to email us and say hi, you can send an email to nerds@nerdappropriate.com. This has been Ash.
And Matt.
And we'll see you guys soon.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.